Saffron Planet. Making sense of it all.
Britain's Got Talent, apparently. No, what was the name of that?
Not
the
that
woman,
apparent on that
the,
TV show.
The Scottish woman. The Scottish woman. No, I don't know her name. Honestly, I don't know her name.
It's this guy.
I don't know. What was her name?
Susan Boyle.
Oh, Susan Boyle. Why would 100,000, no, 100 million YouTube hits be acquired from this?
It's a horrendous amount.
Yeah, but why? Why?
It's because it's a 2.5 or 3 minute clip, very well edited by the people that...
It seems very well, but it looks totally unlikely.
Yeah, it's just one of those, like, little stories that people...
It's contrast, basically.
Because she's got the voice of an angel, but the face of a...
the face of that, I don't know, yes.
It's like
she might listen to this.
It's a typical rags to riches thing, isn't it?
Yeah, but she's not there yet. It's just 1 3-minute performance.
I know.
She may not get through.
Well, there was the freak show, isn't it?
Well, there was the ginger to out to, then they'll get Gok Wan to do a makeover, you know, and whatever. And then
she's had a makeover.
Oh, she's a beautiful butterfly.
There was realise that she's not that great a singer.
There was Well, there was the ginger kid last year who got beaten up and bullied and stuff, and he didn't. No one's heard of him anymore. Do you know what I mean? It was just sort of like he was on the ITN news and everything,
really?
But going on Britain's Got Talent.
Oh, right.
And but you know, a year later,
who was he? I didn't.
Exactly.
I can't remember.
Exactly. You can't remember. It was a ginger kid who was like. Well, the political correctness there.
What did he do?
Oh, he just sang really sweetly.
I remember him.
But none of us can remember his name, can we?
Jeff Tambor.
That's not his name.
Yeah, but significantly, why is this phenomenon? Why do we allow ourselves
Ginger
to be manipulated?
Tom.
I mean, it's manipulation, isn't it?
It's not really manipulation.
It's manipulation. It's disgusting.
Do you feel manipulated?
And I, for one, I feel manipulated.
Do you?
My emotions have been played with by the TV company.
Yeah? Right. Yes. So what should they do about it then?
Surely it's just demonstrate.
It's just entertainment for them.
If people want to watch it, that's their own problem, isn't it? Yeah. If someone gives.
It's like the sort of people that go to see the Jeremy Kyle show.
We've done that on a previous podcast.
That was a low point in my life. I'd like to say I wasn't on
it. But you enjoyed it.
No, I did. It was really horrible because they encourage you to boo and proper have a go at the people for no reason. And then you realise they are real people. You feel a bit bad. But no, that was. I only watched it once and I thought I can't go back there. It's a vile place.
Stand up and talk? Like, didn't you go to the front though?
I did. Oh yeah, they had to check the cameras, so they asked people from the audience to go onto the stage and sit in the chairs and argue. So I went on there and had to pretend that I'd had an affair or something. Yeah. It was an obscure moment, standing on a Jeremy Kyle show, pretending that someone was my mother and my sister and all that sort of stuff. Very weird. I think. Like all these TV shows, the problem, if the TV shows are making it, okay, that's a bit out of order for them. But if we're watching it, we can't really blame someone. If you don't watch something, then you can have a right to have a go about it. But if you're actually being fooled by it, you can't really blame them, as it is certainly your decision.
But then if you haven't watched it, you don't know actually what you're complaining about.
That could be saving you from watching something worse.
This is true. It's
just the fact that our lives are dictated by what we watch through our eyes on a Saturday night.
Sure.
What could we be doing apart from watching TV?
We could be making money, right?
Yeah.
And it's the TV executives that are thinking to themselves, look, we've got money, we're doing okay. Let's see if we can stop as many people as we can from getting this money that we want to make. Put out these entertainment shows 7 days a week. Keep people in their houses. Keep people entertained. Keep people quiet. Mm. It's the opium of the masses. And as long as they're quiet, there's more money for executives.
The masses used to be religion.
Having said that, though, ITV, who are putting this out, are in terrible, dire financial straits at the moment, and it's their only success at the moment.
Is it?
Yeah.
So it's
the only
like
thing they're beating the BBC.
Michael left, isn't he? Well, he's the chairman. No, he's the non-executive chairman.
Michael Gray, yeah.
Actually, there's a funny story about it, because the new head, or was it the BBC? Was Michael Gray the ITV or BBC?
He was at the BBC and he went to ITV.
Yeah, they got a new bloke at BBC as another Jewish bloke at the top.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And they had a shindig in an industry, sort of TV industry thing. where they all sort of talk about their plans and, you know, all the creme de la creme of the production industry.
Blue and, sky thinking.
Yeah, yeah. And I had this, the comedian, the Iranian comedian.
Oh, right.
And he gave a joke and it was sort of mildly anti-Semitic. And, and this bloke, this Jewish head, it all kicked off and they had a row. The two, and
what,
the,
live at this
Yeah,
thing?
Live. And the Iranian went off on a 5-minute diatribe. It wasn't anti-Semitic, but apparently he sort of... I sort of said it was the longest sort of suicide note, you know, sort of, it was like digging himself in the hole.
As always, somebody said the other day, is the equivalent, the TV equivalent, is the equivalent of the press, isn't it? Mm. Never pick an argument with someone who buys ink by the barrel.
Explain that one.
Yeah, don't make them write
like buying while they're opening open newspapers.
Oh,
and
I
things.
See.
Yeah, right. Okay. But that was a TV equivalent, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
I think he's very funny, Comedy Dar. What his name is. He's very funny.
He is, actually. Reminds very me funny. Of Alexei Sale.
Yeah, he's like an Iranian Alexei Sale.
The thing is, he puts it on, doesn't he? It's not his real voice. His real voice is really posh.
He's really posh. He's really posh London accent. Yeah, he just puts it on to sort of sound a bit
more typical. How do you think it goes down in the Muslim community? Then?
Well, there's also there's the other female... Muslim comedian whose name I've forgotten. Yeah. Who does quite a lot. Of
She's Iranian as well, isn't she? Yes.
Probably.
I think they all escaped when the Shah lost power. I think their families came out.
Didn't she come to that thing we went to last year? The media, Christian
that
media.
No, that was another. She wasn't a comedian. She
was a reporter.
Very serious.
She was a news reporter.
Oh, sorry, she just had a funny
Twitch.
So so I want to say about. There's a sense of some Muslims are sort of integrated into the Western society in the media sense, and right. not and don't automatically come under a fatwa like Salman Rushdie did.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, a lot of them did come out of the families escaped.
Yeah,
from
what?
I think you said infiltrate. Did you say infiltrate Western culture? It's very different between assimilation.
They're all fifth colonists.
But no, I know it all depends what they're saying, because like I know like the stuff that I've seen of Islamic comedians, they're not really sort of, there's no big powerful earth shattering statements. It's like, you know, I think one of the women does a few jokes about the fact that some Asian women have hairy lips. I think that's about as deep as it goes. You know what I mean? It's not Salman Rushdie who sort of came out saying.
I find him actually. What's his name? How do you pronounce his name?
Omid Djalili.
I just think he's very funny, actually. Every time I've seen him, he's actually very good at dealing with the stereotype of the extreme Islam. Yeah. Like last week on the show he did about. Talking about, everybody's here, you want to go out afterwards and go out of the pool and get drunk and blah, blah. That's why we want to destroy the West. You know. So he's very good at sort of dealing with that, you know, the extreme views of some of his...
I just wonder how he goes down with the extremists.
Probably not very well.
They probably wouldn't.
I don't think anyone...
He cares what they think. They'll probably find a lot of things offensive.
Anyway, so last time we talked about how many Christian comedians there are, and I think we didn't have many.
Yeah.
Have there been any more since?
There's a few at that Greenbelt. I looked at the old Greenbelt website, and they've got a few obscure supposed comedians.
I think it's an interesting subject. I think what I've realised lately about comedy, and all of us here love comedy, one form or another, but what I've noticed lately is a lot of the very successful comedians at the moment are almost coming into a position where they're becoming spokesmen for anti-Christian.
Greenish.
Even some of the really funny ones that we would find really funny. Ricky Gervais, Eddie Izzard, Stephen Fry. A lot of these people are very, very... they're almost being put in a position, whereas for over several years we've had... really the whole sexual revolution has gone against a lot of what maybe the church represents stuff. That's almost gone now. It's obviously gone.
There's something strange at the window.
Hello!
Right, carry on.
It seems that...
do you think the main topic in society now is religion or anti-religion?
I think it is a lot, but I also think that two very powerful things that draw the public in. Like you have with advertising, advertisers know way ahead. They do all their research on what attracts people and what, you know. For years they've known that sex sells, right? But also humour sells. And I think that's coming into position a bit more now, that the comedy thing, in terms of drawing people, not as far as advertising, but as far as major thinking and major subject matters concerned. And it seems to be coming centre stage and is actually attracting a lot of the public, a lot of their views.
A lot of comedians now becoming spokesmen for certain causes.
They're talking like more
rockstars,
so than ever.
Rockstars used to be like Bono and all that, you know. Right, now comedians are like
comedians
the new
are,
rock and roll.
Sort of. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And you're saying that it's like a lot of comedians now are playing that atheist card and are making a lot of jokes around religion, like organized religion and belief.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking that atheism itself, it's not a movement that the first step is to shout about it. It's almost like a reaction to
an anti-movement.
It's the reaction to the rise in more overt evangelicalism. And because I mean atheism itself isn't like
organized
a movement where people naturally want to convert people. It's more like a reaction to
I would disagree with that.
I think
it is changing now.
A lot of it
now
is
it's like people do want to,
but that's because
it's
like a reaction.
Are actually militant,
but now
atheists.
They are but they it wasn't like that 10 years ago.
No, I think
it's a reaction.
Yeah, well, I think partly a reaction, but partly it seems to be a move. And it may be a reaction is part of what's triggered it. But to me, I think there's a darker underbelly, which maybe the people involved are not that aware of themselves.
I've got a quote here, because I just happen to have this open. The Irish writer that wrote Father Ted. Graham Linehan.
Yes.
This is... There's a big article here. It says what God means to me, and he says
he's a major atheist.
This is man. This is how he sees God. Man in a beard, white hair, sits on a throne on a cloud, tells people whether they've been naughty or nice. Doesn't like women. That's his definition of God.
I mean, and his stuff. I mean, he writes the IT crowd as well, which I love. Yeah, you know, I love his work. I love Father Ted. Mm. But you know, again, although he doesn't overtly use that within his stuff, his is more lightweight.
I think when people are on the stage doing stand-up, you're desperate for a laugh at any... You can, if you're not careful, if you don't plan what you're doing, if you don't have an aim, you just need to get people to laugh at everything you say and then get off the stage having not said anything bad. And something like religion, because most of an audience will either have not much of an opinion or not a very strong opinion, and any opinion they will probably be leaning towards... Christian. It's an easy way of getting a couple of laughs in between the rest of your gags that you've written. It's an easy subject to get people to laugh at, because it's not something that people have a lot of strong opinions on. It's in a positive way,
but
so you
isn't
can talk
about the key to a good stand-up comedian is to create the feel that you're an everyman, and that what you feel is like a representation of what your audience is going to feel.
Well, that's a problem, and sometimes it's dishonest. Sometimes it's honest because it's what they feel, but sometimes it's just manipulating what you... Like, I think, for instance, say Ben Elton in the 80s and 90s, it was thatch this, thatch that, and whether you like Thatcher or not, which I wasn't over keen on either myself, but he was guaranteed to get a laugh out of that.
He
built that up out of,
that was all politics, wasn't it?
That generation
was politics.
Well, the problem is we don't really care about politics, but we all have...
There's a lot on war, a lot of the big subjects of stand-up with
war
and politics.
Not for students don't really know, though, but something like God,
yeah,
something like faith.
Actually, now I remember the one I was thinking about, Stuart Lee.
Yeah.
Is that the one? He's very, very anti-God. Because he did the...
And do you know what?
Jerry
Springer. Thank goodness he's not very funny. Have you seen his latest series?
I watched last week's one when he did God. And it actually wasn't that anti-Christian as much as I thought it would be.
Really? I find him so funny.
I just don't find him very real. I don't find him real.
It's definitely an act. It's totally like postmodern. Yeah, because he almost analyses his own performance while he's performing. I just find that quite bad.
Obviously, a lot of people do find him.
Maybe you're too old.
Maybe
wrong generation.
Maybe. I mean, some of the other people. I mean, I love. I really like Ricky Gervais, and I really like Eddie Izzard. But again, the substance sometimes of what they're saying, I really just find
Ricky Gervais has got two things coming out. I mean, he is militant. In every sense of the word, in that his next stand-up is about science and essentially how science has done away with God and all that sort of stuff, and how all that sort of stuff. And then he's got a film in theory coming out with a guy called Louis C.K., who is a very, very funny man. But the film is all about evolution and how at one stage in evolution, when the gene to lie. There's a whole film based on that. So all of his stuff now is definitely being funneled down into a particular
subject
intent, matter. If that makes sense. Yeah. It's less sort of about, like, I mean, The Office and all that was all about funny, stupid people in stupid situations saying really stupid things, which I think is quite funny. As opposed to what his stand-up is becoming, which is a range of reasons why my opinions are right and everyone else's opinions are wrong. And why everyone should agree with me, which is what stand-up can become a lot of the time.
Getting a bit serious, then.
Well, he's getting a bit up himself.
He's got huge, and he's played upon it, sort of thing.
That's
Whenever he's not on stage, he'll just be like, "I am the greatest man alive."
Yes, that is it. Yes, it's become absolute arrogance. Yeah. I mean, you know.
So you think he's gone over the? He's gone.
I think he believes his own publicity now, and I think I think that's what does happen. A lot of times, a lot of very successful people in any field, they get to the point where suddenly, oh yes, I am great. Like these people
the
really like
no
me.
Clothes, is it?
Yeah,
he doesn't realise he's naked. Everyone else sees naked.
Everything I say is obviously great.
Yeah,
and you know, all my opinions, however vacuous they may be, are important, and people will laugh at them and agree with me because I'm me.
Yeah, I think it's getting back to the. I think a lot of people are doing getting back to the idea of people being funny and situations being funny, and I think, you know, there is an alternative way. You know, in stand-up it's a bit more difficult because you're a person saying words, and so it's difficult because you have to find words and jokes that are funny without presenting any other thing, whereas TV sitcoms are actually sort of calming down a bit more, because there was a time so it was all just like sex, violent, and just like that was the source of the comedy, whereas now if you look at things like The IT Crowd and all that sort of stuff, it's just stupid characters, really, isn't it? It's just stupidity rather than gratuitous.
Is that a progression, do you think?
I think it is, because
in some
you know.
Case, yeah.
So do you think the sitcoms sort of reflect the times? You know, it was political in the 80s, then it went through the sexual and the pushing the barriers, maybe. Now it's all getting dumbed down.
Now it's not really getting dumbed down. It's just getting a bit cleverer.
It's getting a bit more abstract, I think, and a little bit more, you know, like things like the IT Crowd. I mean, I think I just love that series. Yeah. I just think it's really funny.
Peter Kay's Phoenix Nights. That was clever series. Again, about characters.
So is there comedy for the credit crunch generation?
Oh yes, that's probably
Have you seen? Oh God, it's rubbish. I've forgotten his name. Oh, you know who's in it? The Christian comedian.
Yes, you're talking about Not Going Out.
Not Going Out.
See, now this is really great. I love that.
Really,
I love that.
It's just it's one-liners after another.
It is. That's what it is. It's
not really.
It's basically his writing.
Who's his name? There's Tim Vine.
Lee Mack.
Oh, Lee Mack.
Lee Mack. Don't find him funny at
all. Lee Mack's stand-up is amazing.
It is. Yeah.
Best stand-up I've ever seen, and I never.
What sort of stand-up does he do? Is it like lots of one-liners?
It is one-liners, but it's again with the audience. Plays on the audience.
Very good stuff with the audience.
Very lots of words.
I'd have never thought that I'd think of Lee Mack as a really good stand-up comedian, but I've got his DVD and it's the best one I've seen, and I've got DVDs of, you know, all the big comedians. Right. And
who, you know, the guy that played the dad in The Royal Family?
Oh, yes.
What's his name? He was on the One Show this week and he was talking about how there's now a resurgence in that just old-fashioned humour from the Northwest, like...
Not Going Out has a touch of that. Yeah. It has a touch of an old-fashioned style about it.
You talk about Bernard Manning.
No.
But you're saying that now they're going on tours and they're selling out tours just with that simple sort of humour. I think people like that now.
Back to the credit crunch thing, people need to be
relatable to themselves.
Is to get out of their problems and have a good laugh, don't they?
Have a laugh at the problems.
Yeah.
I think it would become too much, and I think there are some people that sort of like, you can get addicted to entertainment, and you can. Yeah. You know, there was a preacher guy that once said, entertainment is the devil's substitute for joy, which, you know, is a very hardline approach, but it's true that a lot of people have their joy and their sort of actual life taken away because they do their rubbish job and then they switch on something to cheer them up. And they go and do their rubbish job, they switch on something to cheer them up. And so the only sort of happiness they get is watching some other situation created by some media guru on a box, and then they go back to their life. Yeah. And there's no actual change in their life, or there's no real happiness. It is 2D, you know, 2-dimensional happiness. Does that make sense? That was something that was mildly amusing.
Real change, just going sort of biblical. There used to be a sense in the Hebraic culture that used to live to work. In other words, work had sort of worth in itself, and people, you know, enjoyed their work and realised that there's a lot of value in, you know, working the soil and whatever. But now, our society now is the other way around, is working to live. In other words, get the work out of the way and live the weekend.
Yeah.
So your life is all about what you do over the weekend, your entertainment. So entertainment has become the only thing that's worth
the source of life.
And, you know,
like, I think that's partly because of the sort of work we do now. Because if you think of it back then, it must have been, I'd like to
work
have...
in the fields.
There's part of it that I would quite like to actually have the ability and of strength. Like, if from like the age of 10 I'd been working in a field, and now I was like 20, I'd be all ripped. I'd be out there for hours smashing rocks, all that, with horses, with nature, and, you know, it'd be awesome, but we train ourselves for office jobs and laptops.
Got absolutely no use to anybody. Really.
And so, but what happens is like your job is sort of you don't really you're just practical. Sort of doing it. It's not like practical.
Everything you do depends on electricity. If there's no electricity,
exactly.
We're all buggered, aren't we?
Let's face it. If like everyone in the UK were pitching a fight against everyone in Bolivia or something. They would smash it, wouldn't they?
It's like having a job that would actually be of any worth on a desert island. You know what I mean?
Yeah. None of us have any... I don't have any skills in any way that would ever protect
me
from anything.
You'd entertain them with your jokes.
Yeah, and that would be of absolutely no use after about 3 minutes.
You watch some of the Bear Grylls.
Like, yeah.
You'd be all right.
But no, I think we'd get bored of work because our work's very little and... Yeah, meaningless and a bit, and so we need
no intrinsic value in itself.
Well, there's a friend of mine. It was one of my old housemates. Yeah. She did a degree. She did a master's, all in like psychology or something. She's now working at a call centre, like 5 days a week. This is after spending, you know, probably a good 20-25 grand in education. She's now working on a call centre. She doesn't care because she earns enough money to go and spend it on the weekend and go out and get absolutely ridiculously.
Well, that's it. They can put up
that, that sort of they can put up it because they know that on the weekend
they know what's coming at the end of it, and it's like it's a trough and a
It should and be. And so sort within of, that, know, that whole entertainment, devil's subject for joy, all that sort of thing. Within that framework, there's no. You know, you're happy enough.
No continuity.
There's just sort of this will do until
that
you know.
Can't be what we were created for.
I think it's just. I think people just get bored very easily.
And if you go to countries where there's not all this stimulus, the pleasures are simple. Like in Brazil, you know, prostitution.
But if you do go to somewhere like places like Africa, you know, they'll be really happy with like a family sitting around a fire singing a song. Do you know what I mean? But like that would be. Over here, that would be, imagine if we, for entertainment, all just sat around and sang some songs.
Like rejoicing with your family.
But it used to be like that. For, you know,
in England,
family in the Victorian times had a piano.
Yeah.
And in the evening, that's what they sang hymns, didn't they?
Well, the other thing is like
Cox is doing that now.
We don't really sort of have entertainment. Family entertainment is a word for makes the parents laugh and their small little children are heavily entertained with it. But there's nothing really that brings adult that teenage brings children.
Britain's Got Talent.
Funny, it is more edutainment, isn't it?
Edutainment.
But like, there's nothing. Yeah. Families don't really do anything together. Do you know what I mean? They'll sometimes put up with each other's favourite TV programmes that the other ones won't like.
Yeah.
And there's not, do you know what I mean? There's people don't really go out and do anything.
I know.
Family yacht trip.
Because families are are not together as much as they used to be.
I think that's partly because, you know, we've allowed, you know, kids go off and do the, there's kids entertainment and kids things for kids. Yeah. There's adult, you know, things on TV, not like that sort of thing. There's things that adults can watch on TV, blah, blah, blah. There's youth stuff. And so you just have all these different pockets, yeah, I mean, and they never come together for anything.
Before the 50s, there weren't such things as youth.
No.
Teenagers were invented, weren't they?
Where's that?
It's a marketing trick, wasn't it?
It's a consumer creation. Yeah. It's like a teenager.
And, you know, it's not...
The Pepsi's, John Hughes, Pepsi generation.
And the other thing is, like, it's not... Before that, you were either a child or a man. Yeah. And in a way, that would probably make life a lot better, because we have a lot of sort of 35, 40... You know, we have a lot of adults that still, in every way, behave like children. But have all the responsibility.
I'm joking.
No, Dad has. Dad's responsible. Dad's what we're talking about. But like,
his feet. But like, everything is his fault. No.
But like, you do see sort of like, you
I'm started a train.
It's all my fault.
But you do see like 35-year-olds, you know, with family, kids, that sort of stuff, and they come home and instead of like spending time with the family, they sit there and play Xbox for 4 hours.
They're,
it's like
they live
that wouldn't
in like,
happen.
It's a perpetual state of arrested development.
It is. And like, but if people.
I don't do that because I don't know how to work the Xbox.
You would if you could.
Yeah.
But it's because like, the teenage thing has spread. It. What teenage used to be 13 to 19.
But now
it's now 13 to 43.
Exactly.
And what used to be a solely teenage thing, like pop music and computer games and all that, is now shared by a wider age group. And it dumbs down the whole sort of adulthood as well.
The problem is, like, people don't, as it were, put away childish things. I don't really sort of go, right, okay, that was fun when I was 12. Yeah. I'm now 24. Maybe I should think of finding some more meaningful things to do.
Pick my age.
Sorry. I'm sure you do lots of meaningful things. But no, it's like, and I think that's just like one of the problems we get into is that people are, kids have parents that just play computer games all the time and they go and sit and watch Cartoon Network all the time and the teenagers sit on MySpace and MSN all the time. So they never speak to each other. Then they go to sleep, wake up the next day, go to school, college, work.
Well,
and
all the
pattern
should all get on MSN.
Yeah.
They communicate with each other.
But could you like imagine what it would be like if everyone actually did think for themselves? It would be chaos. So actually... The status quo is important.
It's to keep it down. It's the opium of the masses. Entertainment is the opium of the masses.
Well, no, I think there are some people that think. There are some people that think for themselves all the time and are natural born leaders. And there are those that can work and do a good job and need direction. I don't think there's any problem with that. I don't think everyone, you know, if there was no TV, everyone would start thinking for themselves and suddenly everything would kick off and there'd be fights and riots. Because I think, you know.
Someone would start.
But who do you think was at the centre of these G20 students who don't have TVs? Okay. They don't have TVs, so they riot.
Yeah, but wait, what happened that night in New York when all the lights went out?
Everyone
I think probably the population
went out and rioted.
Really?
there was a lot of looting, but there was also a lot of like community coming together as well.
Depending on what you
that was years ago.
Whether you were civilised. Yeah, that too. I'm sure there's that happening. And plus, whatever your inclination was, if people can't see you doing it, you did it. Really? So if you went out looted and people couldn't see it because it was all dark, then you'd do it. Mm. Or if you're more sociable, you went out and had street parties.
Yeah, that's
interesting. So what you're saying is that
there is
our civilization is very close to being barbarity, you know, and it's only electricity that's keeping us.
So that's where you should go for.
I just wonder, like in the 50s or before that, when electricity was first reduced, whether if we were to could go back and warn everyone of how it would actually be in 50, 60 years' time.
Well, you know, each generation has its debauchery and its depravity. Victorian era, an early Victorian, people were sort of like getting rid of their babies and you know, and throwing them in the Thames, and, you know, and it was just, so each generation is just the human. Human debauchery just changes its style.
So it's human heart that's the problem.
It is indeed.
And we just excise it in different ways depending on our generation. That's true. I mean, just looking at things like the Holocaust or whatever, the Holocaust could have happened 1,000 years ago if they had technology. The hate was still there.
Well, if you look at, it's that thing like Apostle Paul, you know, his job was to wipe out, though it wasn't to wipe out people, to wipe out the Christians. But, you know, if he'd had the technology, he'd have probably been candidate for an early Hitler, yeah. But you know the intent was there. But obviously he found Jesus and converted and became a great sort of apostle. Yeah. But it is that thing that people are not necessarily always that fantastic. Quite the opposite. They're quite, and as you said, it just takes different forms. There were the 50s. There were bad things. 60s. There were bad things. 70s. There were bad things.
So I think it's getting worse. Then do you think?
I just think it's changing. I think it's getting more covert because we've got better policing to an extent. Mm. So how people do what they want to do is just becoming a bit more undercover.
Plus
a bit
you
more.
Find out.
Oh yeah, some things improve and some things get worse. Basically, it's.
And some crimes aren't seen as bad as they used to be. I mean, look at the Holocaust with Hitler. You can now buy Hitler's paintings.
Can you?
Yeah, it's amazing. In the newspapers. Yeah. You can actually buy his painting.
But if you look a plumber from Redditch or something bought one.
Yeah. If you look at... Yeah. Interestingly, something like that. Interestingly, you were talking about, at the same point, if you think about the Victorians throwing the babies out into the lakes, that sounds horrible. Nowadays, we have legalised abortion.
That's right.
Which is surely only... Which is a similar... Yeah. You know, obviously... It's still the basic idea of I don't want a child, therefore I will get rid of it. Maybe it's a different...
And also in America, since they're legalising stem cell research, you now get a lot of stories now about stem cells can now cure blindness or MS and things like that, which makes it acceptable because of, the ends justifying the means. But the fact is, you're still killing fetuses.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, no, stem cells.
You don't have to. You get it from the umbilical cord.
Yeah, but, yeah.